Welcome to the Keystone Kickoff Show, brought to you by the Keystone Sports Network. Get the best Penn State sports news and analysis at KeystoneSportsNetwork.com or download the Keystone Sports app from your smartphone.
Hello and welcome to the Keystone Kickoff Show. I am Jim. He is Chris. We're talking some Penn State football, but before we get there, another frustrating game for that Penn State Hoops team, Chris. Are we ready to just move right on from that?
Yeah, I definitely do not want to spend a lot of time thinking or talking about it, and that probably reflects for one reason or another the sentiments of the majority of the audience as well. But yeah, that's really, really tough. You and I talked a little bit before we started recording today. I think we were both in agreement that we both really like and respect separately Mike Rhodes as a coach, and think he's got a lot of potential in the future here at Penn State. But boy, for as unfair as it was for him to come here and have to rebuild that roster from scratch in the middle of the offseason as he had to, it still does kind of look that miraculously somehow, Jim, he has built another Penn State basketball team, has he not?
Yes. Those dry spells happen way too often. Let's move on, Chris. Last week, we started the show with what I considered a rather innocent conversation about Bill O'Brien getting the offensive coordinator position at Ohio State. And we, of course, had to discuss a little bit Bill O'Brien's tenure at Penn State. And I pointed out that I'm not the biggest Bill O'Brien fan, so him being at Ohio State does not bother me in the least. And I was not the biggest Bill O'Brien fan when he was here at Penn State. Well, little did I know the reaction we would get. And it really goes to the statement you made. I believe you said Bill O'Brien was the most polarizing figures at Penn State. Turns out, my friend, you were very right based on our audience reaction.
Yeah, you told me that, which is, again, I'm not surprising to me now, but would have been a few years ago. Because, as I've said, I'll freely admit my own bias. I'm a Bill O'Brien stan. Most of my friends and acquaintances are also. So it was a little surprising to me. And a good reminder, by the way, for everyone in and out of the media to try to get out of your echo chambers when I realized how divisive he actually was among the broader fan base. I think, again, my sense of it, my gut, I haven't polled this or anything, but I think the majority of the fan base is in my camp, but the folks who agree with you are not inconsequential, for sure.
Well, I'd like to give you a little bit of sampling of the reaction we got.
Please do.
Before we get back into it, one of our listeners said, "Oh my, Jim, I so adore you. Your perspective on Bill O'Brien matches mine. So naturally, I think you're right." Okay, that was one of them. How about this? What? Bill O'Brien is a hero. He should have a statue at Penn State. And I could go on. Another one. I hope Bill O'Brien does for Ohio State what he did for the Texans, Alabama, and the 23 Patriots. These teams underperformed expectations.
For the record, me too, no question.
So, and again, people who write in aren't going to be the ones with the balanced opinion, who are going to be in the middle.
Yeah,
you're
sure.
You're going to get the extremes. But typically when we get such reaction, it's typically one way or the other, Chris. Mm-hmm. This was pretty much even, it went both ways. So how exactly does that happen? The guy was here for 2 years. There was a fine – sometimes, and we'll talk about this more, there are coaches who, you lose too many games – you're the Antichrist. The following year, you go undefeated. You're a hero. So it's based on your record. Bill O'Brien was here for only 2 years. How could the opinions vary so much, Chris?
Well, again, so point number one probably is it's reasonable to debate how much we talked about it last week. When you think about all the other players who were involved, literally players who were involved in holding that team together and the leadership that was there in that core of veterans led by Mauti and Zordich, who I think not coincidentally were both legacies. You know, so their dads were Paterno guys. They were Paterno guys. That entire senior class had been recruited into and completely bought into the Paterno / Penn State way. So they were the perfect bridge from what had been to what was coming for Penn State. And they were just the right men at the right times. And so starting right there, you can say, well, maybe Bill O'Brien gets too much credit. Maybe it was as much that he just happened to be, you know, in the right position to make the wise decision I talked about to step away and let Mauti and Zordich and Jordan Hill and Steph Morris and Matt McGloin and all those other guys step to the fore and lead their teammates to the season that they had. So maybe number one, Bill gets more credit than he deserves for keeping the team together. And then again, Jim, we talked about it last week. You look at the actual results and there are some very, very impressive wins on his resume, right? You go out to Iowa, you dismantle the Hawkeyes, you beat Wisconsin twice, including in their building as a 24-point underdog. You defeat Michigan in four overtimes in what was one of the most fun, memorable games in Beaver Stadium history, probably. And, you know, it's some really, really nice W's to get you through a rough period of Penn State football. But then there were a lot of stinkers, right? You lose to Ohio. You lose at Virginia to a very bad Virginia team. You lose at Indiana. And so all of those are, I think, by people like myself, just sort of dismissed away as, yeah, well, emotions, sanctions, roster depth, blah, blah, blah. But when you examine then, as your one respondent did, the entire body of work of Bill O'Brien, you wonder whether that was just it, right? That's what you were going to get, whether he had 65 scholarships or 85 scholarships, or whether there was a ton of or zero emotional, psychological turmoil going on his roster. So I think it's fair to look at all of those and make a holistic judgment of the guy. But to me, I'm really only worried about the 2 years, and in particular, the 2 months of August and September, when it was his charge to guide Penn State football through that inflection point post-announcement of the sanctions. I give him a ton of credit for it. And so to me, the hypothetical of whether or not he would have been the guy had he not left for Houston when he did is immaterial. What really only matters to me is what he did when he was here. And that was play, in my opinion, a significant role in holding everything together when it mattered. And we can get into each one of those points, but that's my overall view of how you get to Bill O'Brien, good or bad.
Well, my thought on keeping the team together, I don't want to trivialize what Bill O'Brien did, but I think the players deserve most of the credit. And I guess I'm going a lot by the story that I guess it was Bill O'Brien was ready to give the players, like, look, you're in or you're out right now. Give me the decision. And it was Mauti and Zordich who said, wait, hold on. You know, this is a more complicated decision. You know, you can't just, you're going to force people out the door. Now, give Bill O'Brien credit for listening to the players, but it was the players who made the right decision that held the team together, not so much Bill O'Brien.
Reinforce my point, to kind of now, since I steel man the other side, let me argue what I actually believe. And I talked about this for those who didn't hear the show last week. I think of all the things you can credit Bill O'Brien with, one of the biggest and most important is, Jim, that decision to take a step back. Because look, football coaching is not a position for those of modest egos. And I think we could all agree that Bill seems to think very highly of himself and his acumen as a football coach. And so, and we also know how emotionally combustible he is. And so for him in that high pressure cooker situation, to look at the lay of the land and read the room and say, to mix metaphors, these two guys are right. They've got it. So I need to take a step back and I need to let the senior leadership drive the bus on this. I think that's, you know, that is the sort of, like, I don't even know if I want to call it modesty. Just, I'm going to call it wisdom in the moment that we probably as a society need to demand from all of our leaders more, not just in football.
You can, I could respect that you could spin that either way. And I think that typically, I do respect that he gave the players that leeway and was humble enough to say, okay, guys, you know, I'll acquiesce to what you're thinking there. And it seemed to be the right route to take based on the results. But, you know, typically you think, especially when you're dealing with young men, that it's the coach himself who's going to set that direction. In that same story, I'll take it and feel that it was the players who set the direction. So if you're handing out accolades for it, or attaboys for it, I would put the players at the top ahead of the coach because they're the ones who came up with that thought, with that idea, with that strategy. And it's not, I'm not disrespecting Bill O'Brien for it, but I'm just saying who should get most of the credit. So if there's statues to be built, as one of our listeners said, let's build it to Mowdy and Zordich, not to Bill O'Brien.
By the way, I would be okay with that. Yeah, if they're going to put up a statue or any kind of monument to that season, if you're going to pick a face of the team, I would probably choose those guys. I would agree with that.
So, and again, that's not me shredding Bill O'Brien for it. It's just saying, let's place the credit where it's deserved most.
For the record, setting all debate about the Paterno statue aside, the first two other statues that need to be built on the Penn State campus, since I've got the bully pulpit, are number one of Evan Pugh, our founding president. That's something that was promised to his widow, and he's been dead for over 150 years. And Wally Triplett, but that's another story maybe we'll get into someday in the future.
Well, there's also a wrestling coach who has a pretty good record who it wouldn't be a terrible idea to go a statue there. Probably this is a segment for another
show. Yeah, that's another show.
During the off season where we could talk about what statues are up. Obviously, there is more to talk about with Bill O'Brien and the rest of the coaches. Let's get to that, Chris, when we come back. I got a text message while we were just talking that I want to share with you when we come back. Having multiple sportsbook accounts is the simplest way to get the best available odds, and there's never been a better time to sign up. When you visit our page, signupexpert.com/KSN, you'll be connected to all the sportsbooks in your region. All of these sportsbooks have valuable sign-up offers for new users, and through our link, you'll automatically receive the top offer at each one. If you want to take advantage of these benefits, sign up for your next sportsbook at signupexpert.com/KSN or see the preferred sportsbook button on our app.
It's quarter number two on the Keystone Kickoff Show, brought to you by the Keystone Sports Network. Get the best Penn State sports news and analysis at KeystoneSportsNetwork.com or download the Keystone Sports app from your smartphone.
And welcome back to the Keystone Kickoff Show. He's Chris Buchanani. I am Jim Galante. We are talking Penn State football. More specifically, we're talking Bill O'Brien. Didn't realize a week ago we talked about Bill O'Brien getting the offensive coordinator position at Ohio State and led to us discussing our impressions of his tenure here at Penn State, which we had opposing points of view. And our listeners, well, they had opposing points of view also. They went both ways, Chris. And what I found interesting, I want to finish up first my thought on overall on Bill O'Brien. And the other thing that I think created my negative point of view, two things I'll give you. I think the media, both national and local, just gave him a pass on everything, okay? Oh, they got sanctions. They're being destroyed by sanctions. If he wins a game, he's a great coach. Well, the problem is the sanctions really didn't hit its hardest until I think James Franklin got there in year three and four.
Yeah, there's no question about that. There's no question. You can't dispute that Bill left the cupboard very bare along the line of scrimmage, especially on the offensive side. And again, as we talked about last week, you can't cut 20 scholarships out of a Division I college football program and not have that effect, that knock-on effect down the line, start to hit you eventually. So I don't know that there was ever any way to avoid the offense falling off a cliff come 2014. But yeah, there's no question he got out at the right time from that perspective.
Right, and it almost felt like that was part of the strategy. Look, recruiting offensive linemen, they don't typically show up until year three or four. So in my first year or two, if I don't recruit offensive linemen, it's not going to affect me, and I have one foot out the door anyway, because it was pretty obvious that he wanted to get back to the NFL.
Sure.
And he did. And the other thing that I brought up that really bothered me was that he lost games, those early games to Ohio and Virginia, his first two games. There was no reason in the world to lose those games. None. They didn't lose that much talent. You're playing Ohio, okay? You lost a handful of players in the first example of free agency in college football. You still had so many more better players than Ohio did, and you lost. And I think I wouldn't have been as bothered by it, except by losing those first two games, it just enhanced the narrative that Penn State has fallen off a cliff. And boy, he then wins eight games the rest of the year. He must be coach of the year. And really, I think he lowered the bar so much by losing those first two games, Chris. It bothers me more than it should. It wasn't him who did the voting for coach of the year, but he did have control over this team and lost two games that he should not have lost. So let me give you that text message that I got. Interestingly enough, my nephew, Chris, he's a big New England Patriots fan. First of all, I think it's very telling that he is not brokenhearted that Bill O'Brien is no longer his team's offensive coordinator. He's not broken up about that at all.
I think that represents the majority viewpoint in both Tuscaloosa and Foxborough, yes.
And now he and I both subscribe to The Athletic and read articles there, and we often have discussions about it. I don't know if you saw it. Audrey Snyder, who writes for The Athletic, she's the Penn State beat writer.
Yep.
She had an article this week where she interviewed several of the players from the Bill O'Brien regime, where they talked glowingly about Bill and how he kept the team together and so on and so forth.
Yes, which is a nice counterpoint to your position from the previous segment about how do we balance Bill versus the players during that critical period after the sanctions.
Exactly. But I also think, and no offense to Audrey, who I really, really respect as a Penn State writer. I like her stuff a lot.
Same.
But I believe this is an article that was pre-written. Okay. It was, here's the concept. I'm going to find players that are going to compliment Bill O'Brien. And you follow that story. And the other part to it is, if you ask a player from that regime about the head coach, I don't think you're going to get players disrespecting him or putting him down. You're going to get that kind of reaction. Okay. And my nephews, well, Jim, I already know what your thoughts are on Bill O'Brien. So how much did you enjoy the article that was so complimentary of him? Well, I read it. I respect it, but I disagree. So that is my take on it. My overall feeling, though, Chris, and perhaps you can comment on this, you know, I indicate, how much is it that the media paints the picture for the fans of how we should look at a coach?
Oh, it's not 100%, but it might be 90%, Jim. I mean, honestly, the whole way we think and talk about college football and have done our entire lives was framed by newspaper writers who were dead before either one of us was born. Like, like the entire story, the meta narrative of college football is almost entirely owed to the media, right? Like, if you really want to dig back into why in the world will you find people wearing Notre Dame football apparel all over the country, that's entirely driven by newspapers. Why? I mean, look, I understand Michigan just won a national championship, so good for them. Part of the reason they were able to attract the talent they have is because of the aura that surrounds Michigan football, which is a program that had won half a national title since before the World Wars. And yet they're put up among the royalty of the sport, all driven by the press, right? So yes, 90%+ the media drives the narrative. That's nothing new. That's endemic to the system.
Okay, so now let's move this forward a little bit. I want to talk about James Franklin and the perception of him.
Before we get to James, can I make one final point about the players? So I've had a chance to spend time and talk with several guys who were part of that 2012 team, some of them across multiple occasions. So the ones I probably talked to the most are Jordan Hill, McGloin, and Mike Mowdy, who are all like fantastic guys. Like there was some divine providence at work that group of young men was part of the Penn State football program at the moment we needed the most. Like if you take what 60 years of the Joe Paterno tenure in Happy Valley, it was that last team who was there after he was no longer the coach that probably validated the grand experiment more than anything that was done by any of the other squads while they were in school put together. And what I will tell you is that, yes, you're right, that if they were asked about a coach who they didn't respect, the majority of them, I might put Mowdy in a separate category, probably won't even give you their opinion. No, they'll demur. But they won't necessarily manufacture compliments that aren't true. So you can, with a lot of these guys, you can see very clearly there's a truth in what they're clearly holding back or what they don't say or what they don't choose to offer. And, you know, I talked with the folks who made the documentary Saving the Roar. Sorry, they changed the name halfway through, and I had to refresh my memory what it was called. Saving the Roar, amazing film about that team. And they spent hours and hours and hours with the core of that group. Everything those guys told Audrey Snyder for the Athletic article, that is authentic to what they actually believe. They're not just reinforcing the myth or saying something to be nice. That's their genuine opinion, and they're telling you the truth as they saw it and they know it. And if they said it, they mean it. And if they didn't believe it, they wouldn't have said it.
And you know what? You could have teams that finish 1-11 who will talk about their coach that way. Okay. It's still a results oriented business.
Sure.
And I think that's where, and again, it's that coach of the year award that I think sticks in my craw.
I get it, man. But when you think about like what Lou Holtz said about like coaching 18 to 22 year olds and I get a different team every week, when you consider what it meant to come play Penn State football, you know, I think we talked about in a previous show, one of the things James Franklin is doing well is he's holding his team together because he's attracting recruits who want to play for Penn State, not play college football. Well, that meant even something more. I think it meant a lot more, frankly, than it does anywhere else in the sport now. Back during the Paterno era, to come to Penn State, like this program and this university stood for things. Joe Paterno stood for things. And if you were here, especially as a legacy, as a lot of those guys were, you were part of that, right? And so to see all of that obliterated in the sudden, with the suddenness and the callousness that it was, and then to be made villains for all of the internet to just mock freely for a year prior to that season starting in the way that happened to those guys. And then to go through the coaching change and all the rigors of just what it meant to switch from what you knew and you were comfortable with as a football player and as a young man under Paterno to suddenly switch in the midst of all that under O'Brien, and then to get hammered with the sanctions on top of that and go through all of that stress on top of all the normal stuff Holtz talked about with the 18 to 22 year olds, the grades and the girlfriends and the parties and everything else. I give a lot of grace to the fact that, yeah, we were all messed up in the head at that time. And none of us had to weight train and prepare to play a football game. And in came Ohio, and then down we go to play Virginia. And those guys, I mean, they were skating downhill on a sheet of ice compared to what we were dealing with. They had to focus on football, and our guys had a million different things going on. So, yeah, I mean, did they stumble early? 100%. I don't know if that was damn near unavoidable, Jim. So I guess I grade Bill on a much shallower curve for those two games than you do.
Yes, you do. And I think that it's...
And in the grand scheme of things, like to have that narrative, to have that comeback narrative and make it part of the story of Penn State after the sanctions, I could even make the argument that that is a more valuable chip for Penn State as an institution and a community and a program to have in its history than, oh, hey, we beat the Ohio Bobcats and went 9-3 instead of 8-4.
Well, I think you beat the Ohio Bobcats and the Virginia Cavaliers. You've got a 10-win season.
And he would have been coach of the year in that case, too, Jim.
Well, I'd give coach of the year.
And we wouldn't have gone to a bowl game either way.
A lot more than an 8-4 coach who lost two games where you had way more talent than your opponent, Chris. And what I want to go to from here is not just about James Franklin and the opinions there, but of college coaches in general. To me, it's fascinating how the media and the fans treat that. We'll get to that in quarter number three. Having multiple sportsbook accounts is the simplest way to get the best available odds, and there's never been a better time to sign up. When you visit our page, signupexpert.com/KSN, you'll be connected to all the sportsbooks in your region. All of these sportsbooks have valuable sign-up offers for new users, and through our link, you'll automatically receive the top offer at each one. If you want to take advantage of these benefits, sign up for your next sportsbook at signupexpert.com/KSN or see the preferred sportsbook button on our app.
Let's get back to the action on the Keystone Kickoff Show. Brought to you by the Keystone Sports Network. Get the best Penn State sports news and analysis at KeystoneSportsNetwork.com or download the Keystone Sports app from your smartphone.
Hello and welcome back to the Keystone Kickoff Show. It's quarter number three. He's Chris. I'm Jim. We are having a friendly little debate about the merits of Coach Bill O'Brien, who took over the offensive coordinator position at Ohio
State. That Ohio game, and those first two games, man, degree of difficulty. You, to me, are coming across like the guy who watches like an NFL player or an Olympic sprinter on television, and you're like, ah, I ran track in high school. I could do that.
Still, Chris.
You had more talent than Ohio. You should have beaten him. Like, yeah, I get it. Like, how many times has James Franklin had more talent and none of the mitigating factors I just listed in the last program and last segment, and we still face plant? But sometimes you lose. And there are degrees of excusability. I don't even know if that's a word for when you lose in a situation like that. And on the far end of the, yeah, I can let it go scale is taking a little while to get out of the gate in the 2012 season.
If I recall correctly, I believe they went out to a lead against Ohio, and there was a lot of emotion, and it felt like, okay, they were spent by the second half.
Yeah.
And that came back to haunt them. And it's a degree of difficulty here. If that happened against, say, a Wisconsin at that point, I say, you know what? I get it. But this was Ohio.
Yeah, teams get better as the year goes on, man. I mean, like, was Joe Paterno a bad coach in the 1981 team? Did they stink because they stumbled out of the gate a little bit? And yes, I get it, Ohio. I understand. But to move the conversation forward, the question about Bill really can be summed up in the first snap of that Ohio game. Putting Gerald Hodges back to return a punt. Was that just like a fun novelty thing he did because we were playing with house money that entire season? Or was that indicative of the fact that, and you can maybe, to your commenter's point, look at the rest of his career after he left Penn State and back this up. Is he just, you know, kind of a dummy sometimes?
I don't want to use the word dummy, but was that a smart decision on his part, Chris? Was it
idiotic, clearly. I mean, it was foolishness. And again, the question is, under different circumstances, would he have done it? Who knows? But I do just want to touch on a point I made on last week's show when we were talking about this, just to add some more context to it. Because you asked me who made the better offensive coordinator hire, Penn State or Ohio State?
Yes, I did.
And you put me on the spot, and I answered, I think all things considered, Andy Kotelnicki's the better hire given all the circumstances. And I thought, wow, did I really explain that well enough? Because I still think that. And again, there are two factors that for me give those guys, give Andy the edge when comparing those two guys, although it's a close thing. Number one is everything we've been talking about, all the questions that have cropped up about Bill as a coach, as an offensive schemer since he left Penn State, versus what the industry seems to think of Andy Kotelnicki and the Kansas offense, of course, with the qualifier that we all said and thought those things about Mike Yurcich a few years ago. So that's number one. But number two, to me, is circumstances. I think circumstances are important, and I think they matter. And we know that we've seen James Franklin go through coordinator changes at Penn State. We have seen him more or less hand the reins of the offense over to one of these so-called gurus in Joe Moorhead. And not only has he done it, it's worked to great effect. There is a lot of pressure in Columbus right now on Ryan Day and on that team. Like Eagles fans know, going back to 2012, when you have built a so-called dream team, the pressure ratchets up and the margin of error shrinks. And into that environment, we now have Bill, this very headstrong, combustible guy, going into a situation where Ryan Day, who fancies himself an offensive guru and has never really loosened the reins of offensive play calling, is now all of a sudden bringing somebody who has been a head coach, revered in some circles in your conference, somebody who's been an NFL head coach, somebody who's coached with Nick Saban and Bill Belichick. He's going to come into your building in that high pressure environment when you have never really in your tenure let somebody be another co-equal voice in the room when it comes to the thing you pride yourself the most on as a football coach. I can imagine a lot of ways where that could end in a mushroom cloud, right? It's like you're driving a wagon of nitroglycerin bottles at Ohio State, and any one of them could pop off at any moment. Now, we've seen things go well for the Buckeyes year after year after year, so probably it'll all work out. But the ways in which you can reasonably imagine it going very badly are profligate. If I can use a word that probably doesn't get uttered on this show very often. On the other hand, Andy Kotelnicki is either going to be Joe Moorhead or Mike Yurcich or somewhere in between. And two out of the three are really good. Two out of the three I'd be happy with next season.
Well, first of all, when I asked you the question last week, it was essentially a trick question. It was not a fair question because it's like judging this guy against that guy. But the point that should be made is what you just did. The circumstances mean so much. As you pointed out, we talked about Mike Yurcich the same way a couple years ago as we currently do about Andy Kotelnicki. But the difference is, I think James Franklin, I believe, learns lessons. He changes based on his last mistake. He looks to fix it.
I think that too.
I think there was a cultural issue with Mike Yurcich. Mike Yurcich may have been the best X's and O's guy in the world, but there was conflict there. There was more going on than just the play calling.
And it's fascinating, is it not, that he has not landed anywhere yet?
That is fascinating. It's, you know, a little bit of the shine is off that, Rose, I think I'm mixing metaphors there. But if you go to Bill O'Brien, it might be a really good decision if Ryan Day says, you know what, I'm going to let him be the head coach of the offense. And this is a guy with head coaching experience, NFL head coaching experience, and I'm better off stepping back. As you pointed out, though, is Ryan Day capable of stepping back since he's an offensive guy? And there always is the point where a head coach has to step in and say, hey, wait a minute, stop. I'm still the head coach. I'm the guy with the most at stake here. This is what I want done. I'm not sure Bill O'Brien is prepared to hear that from somebody. So it's going to be volatile. It's going to be interesting. And as I pointed out
last week, Bill has not been told what to do on offense in quite a long time. Like, you go back to when he was an assistant with James under Ralph Friedgen. Ralph was a guy who fancied himself, thought of himself as an offensive mind. Since then, Bill has either been the head guy in charge or, you know, he's been with Saban and Belichick, and those guys, they're defensive guys.
Right.
You know, go out, get me 17 points, all right? More would be great.
Exactly. So that has a lot of there's a lot of ways that could blow up. And, you know, you get the situation here where it's okay with Andy Kotelnicki. I think that there's a meshing of personalities. It's a better fit, and that's going to be important to James Franklin. We shall see. That's the end result that we always have to, well, we'll see, have this conversation a year from now, right?
At least the last decade, like what Andy Kotelnicki has been doing in college, he has been a college offensive coordinator. He has been totally focused on that role. And again, it just to me feels like a safer hand in glove fit, whereas what they are doing in Columbus could work out really well, but it's like juggling jars of nitroglycerin. It could go very badly. And as we know from last season at Penn State, once the hype train gets rolling, all it does is pick up speed. And the hype train is absolutely rolling for Ohio State. And with the moves they have made, the in-house talent they've retained, and the guys they've spent millions of dollars to pull out of the transfer portal, it's championship or bust there. And again, their fans are crazier than ours, for sure. I think I've pointed out before, like all this talk about James Franklin might go somewhere else. The dude gets sensitive when he gets criticized by our fans. And we're, again, by comparison, some of the nicest fans, maybe Nebraska might be up there too. We're among the nicest, easiest fans in big-time college football. And Ohio State is much more to the nastier side when it comes to the expectations of that fan base. So you are putting some hot-headed personalities into a paradigm that hasn't been tested under Ryan Day with the most scrutiny you could possibly have. So, yeah, they're walking a tightrope out there.
And, Chris, the point you make about the pressure that's going on in Ohio State and specifically on Ryan Day is anything short of an undefeated season, Big Ten championship, and a deep run into the playoffs, if not a national championship, will be good enough. So that's going to create the volatile situation there. But how much of this, practically every other team in the country, not named Alabama or Georgia, would be happy with 11-1 and make the playoffs. But at Ohio State, you might end up fired, or at the very least have the wrath of the fan base. And that, to me, is this question of this perception that is created of the coach. And at the end of the day, the media, how they paint that situation with Ryan Day and Bill O'Brien could turn into your next head coach of the Ohio State Buckeyes is Bill O'Brien.
I will tell you, if they find themselves in a situation, in my opinion, if there's a coaching change at the end of the season in Columbus, no one who is associated with that will be employed by the Ohio State University following that, other than maybe Brian Hartline.
Well, that's the thing, though. What is the perception? Do they lose to Michigan in the last game 52-50? So Bill O'Brien's offense put up half a hundred.
Doesn't matter. Under no circumstances, if you're Ryan Day, can you lose to Sharon Moore in year one? You just cannot do it. You can't do it. Maybe if you lose to them and then you win a national championship. That's your only path.
Yes, those are the two outs for Ryan Day. He's got to be.
Notice I said maybe.
Well, what happens if you lose to Michigan and win a national championship? Are you still in trouble? You know, is that Ohio State Michigan game more important than a national championship?
Then you follow Jim Harbaugh to the NFL.
Exactly. Well, the difference is Jim Harbaugh, yeah, he won a national championship, and that's how he did it. All right, Chris, we've got more to go. We've got one more quarter. Stick with us.
Having multiple sportsbook accounts is the simplest way to get the best available odds, and there's never been a better time to sign up. When you visit our page, signupexpert.com/KSN, you'll be connected to all the sportsbooks in your region. All of these sportsbooks have valuable sign-up offers for new users, and through our link, you'll automatically receive the top offer at each one. If you want to take advantage of these benefits, sign up for your next sportsbook at signupexpert.com/KSN or see the preferred sportsbook button on our app.
We head to the home stretch in quarter number four on the Keystone Kickoff Show. Brought to you by the Keystone Sports Network. Get the best Penn State sports news and analysis at KeystoneSportsNetwork.com or download the Keystone Sports app from your smartphone.
Welcome back to the Keystone Kickoff Show. It's quarter number four. He's Chris. I'm Jim. This was our Bill O'Brien episode, Chris. I thought maybe we'd go through one quarter of Bill O'Brien, then we would move on to another point I wanted to make. But that's okay. It was an organic conversation that just kept going on Bill O'Brien. But what I wanted to do was, I think the conversation about Bill O'Brien, though, was an example of how our perception of these coaches, it dictates the narrative for these coaches. We finished up by talking about Ryan Day, who he is 39-3 in conference, 39-3 in the Big Ten. Of course, those three losses were to Michigan.
Yep.
And
John Cooper, man, for people whose memory stretch back far enough, another Ohio State coach who had all the talent in the world, won a ton of football games and couldn't get past Michigan.
Right. And that shapes the perception of the coach at Ohio State. But it's fascinating to me how this is with every coach. And James Franklin is a great example. And again, just like Bill O'Brien, I would say that James Franklin is fairly polarizing also as the Penn State coach.
To say the least.
Which, you know, and it's which side are you on? He can't win a game. He's like 1 in 100 trillion against top 10 teams. So he's the worst coach in the world. Or is he the guy who took this team, rebuilt it out of sanctions in a way that I say no other coach in the country has dealt with. Maybe outside of SMU, okay, which is still trying to get back to where they were however many years ago. But he's won 10 games multiple times. Which side of the coin are you on? And it's really, this goes back to, again, how is the narrative painted about a coach, Chris?
You do wonder, going all the way back to his early days and when he came up here from Vanderbilt, whether if the initial conversation wouldn't have been grounded in the used car salesman conversation.
Yes.
Would the entire way we think and talk about him be different? I don't know that I think that's the case. Here's my take on it. I think the answer to that is like maybe a qualified yes. Like for sure, the jarring shift in style and affect from Bill O'Brien and Joe Paterno to James Franklin absolutely helped anchor the way we've thought and talked about the guy for 10 years now. On the other hand, that's a large enough sample size that I think it can be judged on its own merits. And while I think you, like me, Jim, are probably more aligned to defend keeping James Franklin, much to our own chagrin recently, like I think it has gotten to the point where I have said some stuff in my function as a quasi-media personality that I'm in danger of like ruining friendships because of it. Like people are so mad at me. Like, why can you not see this guy is a fraud and they need to fire him? I'm just so mad. You keep feeding people this trash. But, and yet here we are, I even as somebody who is a defender of James Franklin, I will be the first to say, I think he is often his own worst enemy in terms of the things he chooses to say and how he chooses to say them and the way he comes across. So did the initial narrative put him at something of a disadvantage? I think it's fair to say that. But I also think it's fair to say that he's a smart enough guy that he could have been cognizant of that and chosen to say things differently and chosen to not say some things, especially in post-game press conferences or some of these media availabilities that could have worked against that. And instead, his behavior has probably only reinforced it. So there's undoubtedly some truth to the criticisms that followed him to Penn State from Nashville. And it's just who he is as a guy. But on the other hand, as you and I would probably point out, there are a lot of like offsetting positives.
I do believe there are way more positives than negatives, but it doesn't mean there's no negatives there.
100%.
I'm glad you brought up the used car salesman thing, Chris, because literally those are the words in my notes. Used car salesman, okay?
And that description of James Franklin is like super lazy, and it's also like somewhat accurate, right? Like there's grains of truth in it. Now, I think it's unfair. I think in some ways he is – I'm going to get smoked for saying this, but it's true. I think he is almost like – too earnest and authentic for the direction college football is going. I think if you could actually like open up that guy's skull and peer inside, and some of the players who have played for him, who I've talked to, reinforce this, he really is at heart kind of an old school college football guy. I don't think he minds that the players are getting paid, but I don't think he likes the direction that college football is going. I think if you could get an authentic answer out of the guy, he would tell you that, yeah, I think we're probably devaluing a lot of the benefits of the game, including the education that the players have access to. And so, you know, I think that this idea that he's nothing more than just like a shallow, slick salesman who gives you the sizzle and not the steak, I think there are some aspects of that that have some grains of truth to them. But I think PJ Fleck is way more what James Franklin is accused of being than James Franklin is.
Well, see, and this is part of my point. Initially, that used car salesman, and you described it perfect, the difference between Bill O'Brien personality and then you bring in James Franklin, it created that narrative. It's why I cringe every time, and I suspect James Franklin does. Oh, he's a great CEO. Let me translate that for you, Chris. He doesn't know how to coach on game day. He doesn't know how to do X's and O's. Oh, he's a great CEO.
And here's the problem with that, though, right? Like you and I are like, oh, well, this is CEO. That's kind of a backhanded insult to James. But he doesn't know how to coach on game days. Like there's no question. The place where he's the biggest liability is when he's managing the clock or making key decisions about should we or should we not run a stupid special teams trick play here. And he will typically make the wrong choice. So, yeah, like it's yes, he is a CEO. So if it's a backhanded slap on the guy, it's a not inaccurate one.
Well, there's enough of an element of truth to carry that as the whole narrative. But I think the problem is if some of these opinions were established and now we look for ways to justify them. The infamous post-game, you know, going great to elite. Okay.
Right.
Who was that for? It was for a lot of those recruits. Hey, we need you to get us from great to elite. He being accused of being a salesman, he was selling there. Well, guess what? That's a huge part of this job. But he's been shredded for that so badly where, again, if things had turned the way he wanted them to, where they would get over that hump, it would have seemed prophetic. Well, the end result wasn't quite there, so he gets shredded for it, and it was an element of honesty, and I don't think anyone could argue that the program was really good, was going in the right direction, but still needed to make that next step to elite, so he's getting shredded for being honest.
Well, and think about going back to narrative, what everybody thought about the guy. Hey, this guy won 9 games a year at Vanderbilt. He took Vanderbilt to bowl games. He beat Georgia with Vanderbilt. What's he going to do with Penn State's resources? We got to climb out of this hole of the sanctions, and then he's going to turn them into an absolute juggernaut. And going back to the ego of these guys, 100% James Franklin believed that story coming in. He knew in his gut that when he took the Penn State job, within 5 years, he was going to have us playing for national championships. And so going back to my point about everybody thinks, oh, he's just this shallow, you know, the surface level guy. That was all calculated communication for recruits. No, he's actually way more authentic and probably at times a little more undisciplined than he should be, than people think. I think that Great to Elite press conference, I think that was an honest emotional outburst because he was frustrated that the story he knew he was going to be the main character in was not going the way anybody expected. Like, they were just supposed to win that Ohio State game. Look at what he let slip out after this year's Ohio State game. He let everybody know that he already had the post-game speech he was going to give in his press conference written in his head. And, you know, some people will criticize him for that, and we sit in the media, we sit and psychoanalyze these guys and pick them apart. There's nothing wrong with the guy envisioning success. You talk to successful people in every walk of life in this country, and they talk about the value of envisioning what success looks like.
And, Chris, remember where this team was when he took it over. In the depths of the sanctions, went 7-6 the first 2 years. And at that point, we questioned, remember, it'll take a decade, maybe 2 decades, for Penn State to become Penn State again.
Sure.
The following 8 years, 5 of 8 seasons, he won either 10 or 11 games. He had 4 top 10 teams. Now, after that, what was it, the 2015 season or whatever that year was, if you were told this is what's upcoming in the next 8 years, 4 top 10 teams, 5 double-digit win teams, would you have not signed up for that?
Yeah, sure. Which is why I'm not, like, furious right now. I'm not brimming with rage. I'm disappointed because I think we've had good teams that could have done a little better than they did. But that's college football. And you can look at it and say, well, Chris, how can you come on the radio and say the guy is a liability on game day and still defend him as a head coach? Well, just because, as I've said many times, the job of head college football coach is it's a ridiculous job. It's a stupid job. You're given way too many responsibilities across way too broad a swath of categories. So you're never going to have anybody who's good at everything, again, other than maybe Nick Saban, and now he's retired. So you're always going to have strengths and weaknesses in these various categories. And so the CEO thing, that's an important part of running a college football program too. And we're so hyper-focused on Penn State as fans that we don't look around the country and see that, like, yeah, some of these X's and O's guys, they may be able to out-coach him on game day, but they can't accrue talent like he does. They can't do the CEO level stuff that he does. They can't sway donors and all these other things that are also an important part of heading a college football program. And it's all about the value of stability versus how you weigh the balance of advantages and disadvantages that your particular guy brings to your unique situation.
All right, Chris, that's going to have to be the last word. It was a very interesting show. Sometimes it's fun when we don't agree, as we had with the Bill O'Brien conversations. Hopefully over the next couple of weeks, I'll find a couple more topics that we don't agree on. Those shows go fast when we see the opposite sides of the coin. That is it, though, for our show. Thank you all for listening. Join us again next time on the Keystone Kickoff Show. Having multiple sportsbook accounts is the simplest way to get the best available odds, and there's never been a better time to sign up. When you visit our page, signupexpert.com/KSN, you'll be connected to all the sportsbooks in your region. All of these sportsbooks have valuable sign-up offers for new users, and through our link, you'll automatically receive the top offer at each one. If you want to take advantage of these benefits, sign up for your next sportsbook at signupexpert.com/KSN or see the preferred sportsbook button on our app.